So Kathleen Kennedy's like Oprah with Star Wars trilogies, like handing them out left and right.
Yeah.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Jim.
Ted, how you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Oh, great. Another week by, another bunch of trailers, and one of my favorite nights of the week.
Definitely mine. I was looking forward to this all week, but especially the past couple days. I don't know, not to belabor it, but you know, the one thing I'm happy about being an audio-only podcast, you don't have to worry about sync. For the past 2 days, I've been looking at the same 30-second spot all day long on Thursday and all day long today, and the sync was off. And it went through an audio sweetening room. It went through a color correction room where the guy was doing some finishing to it. And then it came to me in my bay, and it's out of sync. And, you know, went to the machine room, would talk to engineers. 2 days of just dealing with laying out this spot, re-rendering this spot, scrubbing it out, redoing it, having all these people look at it for 2 days, this 30-second spot.
For 30 seconds. Unreal.
Yes, 30 seconds. So, luckily, we do audio only, so we're good to go, and we don't have to worry about the sync.
We don't have to look like a 1970s Japanese dubbed English movie, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So last week was the Super Bowl. I guess
it was
a couple weeks ago. And of course, the Super Bowl is kind of it's the Super Bowl for trailers. All the trailers for the big summer movies come out. And then it also kicks off award season. So we get the Oscars coming up in about a month. Before we get into the main trailer of the week, I wanted to just give a quick recap and do just the three-word reviews, only the three-word reviews, for all of the trailers of the Super Bowl. So a couple of them we've already done. Red Sparrow was in the Super Bowl. Cold War Gender Bender, that was our three-word review for that. And A Quiet Place was Silent But Deadly. Solo is the next one. We'll do the deep dive on Solo. So we'll come back to that one. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Blue is back. So the dinosaur that is Chris Pratt's friend is back in this one. Skyscraper, yet another Dwayne Johnson movie. So this three-word review for Skyscraper is peak Dwayne Johnson. You can't have more The Rock than what we've seen in the past few months and what we have yet to come in fiscal year 2018.
So is that like peak oil, peak exactly. Dwayne Johnson?
Peak oil, peak Dwayne Johnson. You have Jumanji, yeah. Rampage, Skyscraper, fighting with a family, and then they pre-pro announced San Andreas 2, Jungle Cruise, Jumanji 2, Doc Savage, Black Adam, Suicide Squad 2, and my favorite, Big Trouble in Little China. So he's going to be remaking Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Then we had Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible Fallout. The three word for that is that ankle, though. Did you see any of that? I'll put a link to the Graham Norton show that goes into Tom Cruise's accident on set where he broke his ankle jumping from one building to another.
Yeah.
Quite a harrowing stunt that he did himself and broke his ankle in the execution of it. Then Cloverfield Paradox. And my third review for that was watch it tonight. Like, what's the point of having a trailer and no anticipation and then they spring it on you and then you can watch it a few hours later? I tried to watch it later that night. Couldn't bring myself to do it. It had no build, you know, it's like build up with no build up. So it was a very strange thing. Then Avengers Infinity War. Maybe Too Big is the one that I really want to go with. I don't know about the scope of this movie, but it seems like if you're covering Infinity and you're covering war, maybe the scope of the film is just too big. And then Jack Ryan, Amazon, the Amazon film or Amazon series, not really a film trailer, but still a good TV spot. Still John Halpert, as we like to say, whenever we see John Halpert in anything, whenever we see What's his name?
John Krasinski.
Yeah. When you see John Krasinski in anything, you know, we just see the office, the guy, the wisecracking Jim, John Halpert.
Jim Halpert.
John, I think it's John Halpert. You're Jim.
No, it's Jim Halpert. Come on now. But you're right, though. How can you not see that? It's, you know, it's like when you see Pam, you know, it's like she's all cute and everything. And, you know, they have a little crush on each other. It's like any movie you see, it's like, you know, where's Jim and Pam, you know?
Yeah, I saw her in my Starbucks that I always talk about. I saw her in the store and I was like, can I get a selfie? And she was like, no. I'm like, I still like your stuff.
So. Hey, we're doing trailers. So what were your thoughts on the faux Crocodile Dundee Australia commercial with Chris Hemsworth?
So Chris Hemsworth, Paul Hogan, and I forget the Eastbound Down guy. I'm not a big fan of his.
Well, the party I was at, mm-hmm. everybody was kind of just like doing their thing, like, you know, going for their chips and cracking another beer or whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this commercial comes on and like everyone froze and we all kind of stare at the screen like they're rebooting Crocodile Dundee. And everybody was like,
you didn't hear the whole couple of weeks before lead up into it?
No, I didn't. Well, okay. Apparently no one else did either.
No one at your party did.
Because we all froze in our tracks.
In L.A., we were very attuned to the coming and goings of Crocodile Dundee, the reboot. And it was clear that it was going to be some kind of comedy. I actually talked about this at work earlier today in a meeting. And to me, it was a great take on what we've seen in the past few years in Super Bowl ads, Super Bowl commercials, Super Bowl trailers, is that you'll end up releasing the trailer early. This started with the Volkswagen Darth Vader, the kid Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Where they released the ad 5 days before or something like that, a week before. And they got all the lift from the 5 days prior to the airing at the Super Bowl. And it's still sustained through the Super Bowl and after the Super Bowl. So the streaming of videos before and after the Super Bowl allow it to extend the life of something that used to be just a one-off. Used to just play it in the Super Bowl, and then that was the one shot you got, and then you could put it into rotation after the Super Bowl and, you know, extend the life of it, kind of like a Doritos ad that goes into rotation after.
Yeah.
But this is a great take on it, I thought, because it basically teased to the fact that there was going to be a movie. And then about a week out, people that were hunting uncover the fact that it was a fake. And then nobody knew exactly what it was for. So they kept under wraps the fact that it was for the Australian Tourism Board. Many people in my office thought about that as the reason, the thing that they were doing. All the actors are very Australian. You know, they had Hugh Jackman. They had, you know, like you said, Chris Hemsworth. They had a bunch of other Australian actors. So it had this Australian feel. It had a great pre-Super Bowl lift. It had the Super Bowl reveal. And then it had the sustain afterwards just by exposing the fact that it was a play on the trick on the audience. And a trick that, you know, not harmful in any way. So it had no downside to it. So this allowed to extend the life of something, extend the life of a campaign, but also preserve the specialness of the Super Bowl spot.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. So before we get into Solo, I have a story, Star Wars story, but not a Star Wars story, but a Star Wars story. And so I was talking with a coworker the other day at work who listens to the podcast, you know, hey, Paul. And we were discussing the latest Star Wars movies, you know, like all of them, though, you know. So I made the comment that the last one, The Last Jedi, Clarissa and I saw it on Christmas Day, and it made me realize that I think I might be outgrowing Star Wars.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, he, to my surprise, he promptly agreed, such that lots of Lucas reboot type feel to it. You know, it doesn't have the original feel. It's more splashing all the junk on the screen and all the magic and all the stuff that goes on. And we got to talking further, and I said, you know, follow my train of thought here, is what I told him. I said, if you look at any of the original three movies, at any point, I can quote a line and you will know the movie, the scene, the context, who said it, why it was said, who it was spoken to, and on, right? I mean, like, you just know the whole context of why that quote was made. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to the latest movies, the Disney-owned movies or whatever, and they all kind of run together. I can't tell you who half the actors are. Well, I shouldn't even say the actors. I can't tell you who the characters are. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just not as intimate. It's more like blockbuster feel. And as we're talking, you know, Paul agrees and he says, you know, you're right. I bet you can't quote any line from The Phantom Menace. And I said, Misa like you. So he's like, oh, man, you got me, you know. So I go back to my office and I'm like, you know, I better search this to make sure I have the right saying. Yeah. And sure enough, I can't find anywhere where Jar Jar Binks ever said Misa like you. He says all kind of movie and all this other stuff. And oh, my God, I can't believe it. But Paul was right. I can't quote a line from The Phantom Menace. You know, I was close, but I wasn't actually doing a line. You know, the main point there is now we have Solo coming out. We're reviewing it and it's another Star Wars story. So I'm assuming, I mean, it's certainly part of the canon, but it's not like in line with the other ones. Well, so how would you describe that though?
Yeah. So I think what we've established, and we, I mean the royal we, I'm not at all associated or related to Lucasfilm. That's my legal disclaimer there. but in the...
Which I have a question about that too. So not you, but the Lucasfilm thing.
So we've established the fact that when we say a Star Wars story, it kind of gives the writer, the director, the filmmakers license to stretch the canon. You know, when we talk about other franchises like Star Trek, people are just so locked into the canon. And then as other fans write their novels and all this fiction, it becomes canon. And as comic books are made of Star Wars, that becomes canon.
Exactly. And I was thinking about the books and everything.
Yeah. So there's all these things that are like that. And I think Rogue One was the first with this moniker of a Star Wars story. And it was the wink and the nod to all of the hardcore fans out there to say, hey, like, back off a little bit. This is going to go places that are unexpected. We're gonna do things that you might not approve of within the canon of the first three films. And then at the end, you know, it ties so neatly into New Hope. It, like, it ends with the very first scene of New Hope, and it gives you the, you know, the final, that this is the crawl of the of A New Hope, explained and expanded into film. So I like the idea of that. Like, it's a bait and switch, a little bit of like, give us some leeway, and then bam, we're tying you right into one of the storylines, one of the threads. What's interesting is episodes 1 through 3, they were Darth Vader's origin story. You know, they were Anakin Skywalker, boy, Anakin Skywalker, young man, Anakin Skywalker, Jedi, sure, and then the transformation into Darth Vader. So, I mean, this is, you know, I think they're compressing the storylines and doing trilogies. And now, you know, the way that Kathleen Kennedy is brilliantly expanding the Star Wars universe, she's already told Rian Johnson, you know, the director of The Last Jedi, here, you go off and you're not going to direct the last in this trilogy, but here, you get your own trilogy. You can explore another part of the Star Wars universe. And then last week, Kathleen Kennedy tapped the creators, the showrunners and creators of Game of Thrones, and those two guys, and they said, here, you're really good at storytelling, you're really good at complex characters, you get a trilogy, you get a Star Wars trilogy. So Kathleen Kennedy's like Oprah with Star Wars trilogies, like handing them out left and right. And with Solo, it's a little bit different. I think they initially went with The Legos directors and didn't really work out. And then they brought in Opie. And he was supposed to, like, take over, patch it up, and get it out the door. But he said, no, forget that. I'm a director. I'll reshoot the whole thing if I want. And he ended up reshooting a lot of it from what I've read. And hopefully it's all for the better.
So essentially they're getting, what, artistic liberty to do what they want in the name of Star Wars and keeping with the traditional canon and adding to new canon, I guess.
Yeah. I think there was a tone that the producers, you know, led by Kathleen Kennedy, the board of directors, so to speak, you know, they'll let the directors kind of work within a space. But I guess Miller and Lord were too, they were too tongue-in-cheek about it. I think they didn't have the right tone coming from, obviously, from the Lego movies. This is the assumption that is out there in all the speculation, is that maybe they didn't strike the right tone. And that's why they said, hey, we're not doing a slapstick Solo movie. You know what I mean? We can have humor in things. Obviously, Poe Dameron was lambasted for having too much humor in The Last Jedi, I think.
I think that might be why I'm saying that I'm outgrowing it. It's almost, they got to bring it back around again, you know, to something a little bit more serious, a little bit more sci-fi and less
slapsticky.
The slapstick, you know, I mean, aliens farting as you're driving past on a speeder, you know, I mean, like, that's just, I just don't get into that, you know?
Right.
The other question I had too, well, I have two things I wanted to ask. So Star Wars stories, as we said, kind of are a diversion from the linear canon.
Right.
And Rogue One, and it looks like this one might be the same, is where they don't start with a space scene. But instead, what they wind up doing is they just kind of get right into the action. And the trailer kind of implies that when they're hitting all the switches right in the beginning.
Yeah.
Which I would say is them starting up the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, no, it feels like that. You know, it feels like you're kicking off, you're starting a new thing. And it's just, you know, a close up kickoff kind of thing. Oh, one last thing about the way they rolled it out. They did a teaser to the teaser trailer in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So once again, you're kind of extending the bang for the buck. You know that you're going to have a 90-second, a minute 40 piece that you're going to put out there. But instead of just putting that out and, you know, spending all that on one showing, if you know, because it's on another network, why not push something to your own network? And they did it with the teaser, the 30-second TV spot, which you pay less for because you're paying for time on the Super Bowl. So as you know, as owners of ABC, they paid less to NBC to tell people to watch Good Morning America the next morning to be the first to see the actual trailer. So that was a nice way to extend the experience and kind of preserve, you know, the synergy that is so Disney.
Yeah. And then the other question I had too, so, like all these movies, you see Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm.
Disney owns the movie. Why do they keep the Lucasfilm? Is that just for legacy?
Well, no. I mean, it's still a Lucasfilm film. I mean, all the Marvel movies, they're also owned by Disney. And they do not put Disney in front of Marvel movies. Disney's the distributor. So they have that as one of the companies up at the top.
Oh, okay. I got it.
The only one that isn't like that is the Disney Pixar, because Pixar is fully integrated into Disney. So that's a hyphenate where it's a Disney Pixar film.
I gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Cause you know, you watch it and you keep seeing Lucas, but Lucas doesn't own it anymore, but yet they keep saying Lucas and you're thinking, well, why, you know, but that makes sense because like Marvel or DC Comics,
right.
You know, any of that stuff. Yeah. No, that makes sense. So, I guess we've kind of already jumped into Solo, so we may as well just keep going with it.
This is the spot that was aired the next morning in Good Morning America.
Yeah. And probably the biggest, well, I should say biggest complaint. One of the complaints I have is it starts off and he's flipping the switches on the Falcon.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, you can only assume it's the Falcon. And they get right into a very modern sci-fi sounding musical score. Nothing like John Williams. There's no Star Wars music. Well, towards the end, you get into a little bit of the...
The hints of it. The hints of John Williams score.
But nothing that says John Williams. I mean, where is he when you need him?
Do you need him here? Do you want him here? You see this?
I don't know.
You see the Lucasfilm and you want that? You want that sound?
I mean, and again, maybe I'm a traditionalist. Kind of like what you're saying about the Star Trek people, right? Yeah, the canon. I mean, if I'm going to watch a Star Wars movie, I'm looking for that type of a musical score. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where you're going to bring in Han Solo. He's a rogue outlaw. And, you know, typically, and I think in the trailer they do a decent job of it, and probably in the movie, that Han Solo is like this calm, cool, collected dude, unless he's running from stormtroopers in the Death Star. But it just seems as though it slides away from the canon a little bit, even though it keeps it within Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon. And I'm assuming it's going to tell the story about how he acquires, you know, from Lando, the card game Sabacc, and you know, he gets it, and maybe they're going to talk about Lando
Sabacc. No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
Yeah, Sabacc. I don't know. You know, Wikipedia does me well. Wikipedia, I should say. Are they going to tell the Lando story about how he soups up the Millennium Falcon with, you know, weaponry and shields?
Oh yeah, I mean, Donald Glover looks like he'll steal the show in this thing. So I mean,
okay, here's the thing: is he going to pull a Billy Dee? When Billy Dee sees Princess Leia and he says, well, what do we have here? I mean, if he does something like that, I mean, I am going to just like, I'm going to forgive everything about this movie, no matter what.
Oh, you want that?
I want him to be like Billy Dee. Okay. You know, I mean, he's got to be like Billy Dee, you know. But right, I mean, that one line when he first sees Princess Leia and he and he just goes, well, what do we have here? I mean, I can't say that enough, you know? Yeah, if he's that type of a character, I shouldn't say that type of a character. If the actor plays Lando the way Billy Dee played Lando, oh, I'm all in. I mean, as far as like, you know, like I said, the hyperdrive and shields and weapon systems, if they tell that story about how it went from a freighter, you know, because what is Lando? He's an
interstellar.
Gambler.
Arms dealer, yeah. Gambler, trader.
So he buys this freighter that's just a piece of junk, and he soups it up to have weapons and hyperdrive and shields and, I mean, the whole thing, to where he can hide people, he can smuggle, he could do all this stuff he does, and then he loses it on a pink slip in a card game. And then Han acquires it. And if they tell that story about how all that became, I think that'll be a pretty cool. I mean, maybe it's not even interesting, but to me, it would be interesting. And then from there, you see Woody Harrelson, and it appears as though Woody Harrelson is introducing Chewie to Han.
Well, he's putting the team together. Woody Harrelson is becoming the Danny Ocean role. I talked to Ron Howard about this film, he said that this is going to be your typical heist movie, as we always talk about the seven movies. Oh, the seven movies, right? The seven stories that you can tell in film. I watch a lot of YouTube, and Masterclass comes up a lot. Have you seen the Ron Howard Masterclass?
Masterclass? No, you got to send me a link.
I got to send you this link. I'll put it in the show notes too. So Masterclass does great filmmakers, and they have Aaron Sorkin doing screenwriting, Helen Mirren doing a masterclass on acting, and now they released Ron Howard doing a masterclass on directing and filmmaking. And he talks about the seven stories you can tell. And in an interview about this movie, he said, this is going to be your typical heist movie, except with the dressings and all of the accoutrements of the Star Wars world and Han Solo's origin.
Well, of course, yeah.
But here's an interesting thing to kind of go back to your idea of canon and the things you want to see and what would be satisfying to you. And we watch something like this, a trailer like this, and the minute it comes out, the Twitter sphere explodes. YouTube starts throwing up videos on people having their expectations, their stories.
And, right.
You know, as I was saying, you know, as I love to do all my research at Starbucks in Burbank, Jeff and I were talking about it, and he had a neat little perspective on it. He said he doesn't mind spoilers. Like, spoilers are just a part of life. You're going to be exposed to spoilers. You're going to have to suspend disbelief. You're going to have to forget that you heard that about this story and just be, you know, shocked and pretend like it's the first time you're hearing it when you hear it. But what he didn't like was the idea that so many people have so many theories. And basically, a theory is just a person's hope that something's going to be in the film the way that they want it to be. And when there's something as big as this that comes out and so many different people have different ideas and different things that you kind of project into this space, that you can never satisfy all those people.
Everyone's disappointed.
And everybody gets disappointed. So that's what happens. That's what happened with you and The Last Jedi, you know? And
yeah,
to go into something where it's a Star Wars story and then it's not Star Wars colon some, you know, The Last Jedi, then you have hopefully the flexibility to kill everybody off. You know what I mean? So to speak.
Yeah.
It's like the killing off of the people is what liberates you as the filmmaker, you know? This L337 is the name of the robot, the new droid in this. And he's got that Lando flair, and they're doing all this stuff. And I can't wait to see more of the BTS, more of the behind-the-scenes stuff on how they get the actor to do all that mocap acting. So that's going to be phenomenal. If he's even approaching K2SO, then he'll have done his job. But it's, you know, that's going to be an amazing storyline that I don't have any specific expectations for it, but I'm just excited to see what they do with that. So, you know, if they don't do anything with it, then I will be disappointed. But they put it in the trailer. They're gonna kind of showcase it. I think they understand K2SO's appeal out of Rogue One.
Yeah, and where does this come in? Like, when we look at the prequels and Phantom Menace, Darth Vader, who you would assume in Star Wars is probably around the age of Han Solo. And I'm not sure exactly where the ages fall, but in Phantom Menace, he's a child. Where do you think that the Solo movie comes in within the context of the prequels? It's kind of like a parallel story to what's going on with the Darth Vader origin.
Yeah, it's got to be close to episode 3. Han is a little bit older than Luke. Well, I guess he's a decade or so. I don't know. What do you think? He's a decade older than Luke?
Yeah, I'm going to guess. If you think about it, he's probably like 10, 15 years older than Luke. So then that means Darth Vader might be like 20 years older than Luke, because as his dad, I guess.
Talk about an intimidating father-in-law, right? I mean, Darth Vader's your father-in-law? That's kind of weird.
So Han, say, is probably like a little bit younger maybe than Darth Vader, I guess. So it probably puts like, and I don't know how far this goes back. I mean, he has the blurb about how he started like running, you know, scams since he was 16 or whatever.
Since he was 10.
Yeah. If it goes back, I mean, I think that's just like a one-liner where it kind of sets the stage. You know, maybe he's in a bar talking about that, which kind of says that this is going to be
after the Clone Wars. It's got to be during the Revenge of the Sith time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think maybe it has...
Yeah,
it has,
after Clone has, Wars... Exactly. I think it's somewhere in between those two movies. I don't know. It's hard to say, but and it's just a parallel story.
Right,
is all
exactly.
It is.
You don't have to worry about where it is exactly in there.
They're not going to intersect.
Well, it may. So
well, that's true.
I was watching Cantina Reviews. They have a YouTube channel over there. But they were giving predictions all over the place, and I chimed in over there. And they were talking about how neat it would be if this film ended as Han Solo is walking into the cantina and you kind of see Greedo off in the corner. So it kind of sets you into that other scene, that other iconic scene in New Hope.
Because that's the first time we meet him.
Yeah. So if we end this movie at the same place where we meet,
I can see that
as a first time, that would be really great.
Man, Ted, spoiler alert! Jeez.
Well, we haven't seen this, you know, and it's that's from
But you know what? I bet that's where it goes, man.
That's where the Cantina review guys were going, and then I said, you know, the Kessel Run is the greatest thing because obviously this great. Nebula that we're seeing the Millennium Falcon fly through this cloudy space is a great place for smugglers.
With like the huge squid.
Yeah, it's a great place for smugglers to, you know, evade, you know, normal space travel. So you go through there. And then I took it one step further and I said, you know, he's got a load of carbonite and he's got a load of carbonite that he has to deliver to Cloud City for Darth Vader. Right. So he's doing that unwittingly. For Darth Vader, but yeah. To make the Kessel Run in the 12 parsecs, he has to dump the carbonite. So he dumps his load of carbonite to make the Millennium Falcon go faster, and then that's why he's, you know, running from Darth Vader and Jabba the Hutt and all of that. What do you think?
Yeah, which really makes no sense because you're in outer space, but. Anyway, so let's see, what was the other thing I had in my notes?
Well, here's one really far-fetched theory while you're scanning through that stuff. I don't know. Are you familiar with Rebels, the XD TV show, Star Wars Rebels?
The cartoon?
Yeah, the cartoon.
The animator? Yeah. The animated one?
So that's wrapping up this month. And Ezra Bridger is the main character in that, and he's a very strong Jedi. But he wants to be a pilot, too. And he's also a kid who runs scams through Lothal. And he's really good with a blaster as well as a lightsaber. My theory is that when Han Solo says that he's been running scams, you know, in the streets since he was 10, what if Ezra,
right.
What if Han Solo was Ezra Bridger or they were in some way one and the same? And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a very, very, very far reach, but, you know.
Yeah, to go into the animated TV series.
Well, I think Saul Guerrera's in both, you know, so.
That's true, yeah. The one thing about Star Wars, and the reason I say that I feel like I'm outgrowing it, mm-hmm. Another reason I feel like I'm outgrowing it is every Star Wars kind of has the same thing where they arrive at their destination, and then there's always the huge chase scene between, like, they're running from the Imperials and they're taking off and they're trying to get away, and the Imperials are chasing them and everybody's shooting, and they go through these acrobatic stunts, mm-hmm. of flying around asteroids and doing all this stuff. And then somehow, like, other ships come in. It's always the same thing. I hope they get away from that because it's almost too predictable. Once they get into that scene, you're like, here we go. I'm on this flight now. And I mean, it's exciting. I'm not saying it's not exciting, but it's, we've seen it already. We don't need to see it for movie number 8 now, right. You know, or whatever number this is. I mean, it's just, yeah. And those are the things that I'm like getting tired of, I think, is just the same space chase scenes. And in this one, they're showing another one, but there's like a huge octopus or something. But
yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the worm in, you know, an Empire, you know.
An Empire, yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be things that are trope-worthy. But I have a lot of faith in Ron Howard. I think Ron Howard, the fact that he's helming this is huge.
Oh, he's a great director.
He's a great director, and I think he's gonna get the performances. I think he understands the story structure. I think he understands...
As long as Ron Howard doesn't ruin my childhood, I'm okay. But and that brings me to my last point, though, is so many Star Wars movies, and, you know, the original three, I'll kind of forgive them a little bit, mm-hmm. But so many Star Wars movies, especially the prequels, I mean, they just have these like this awful dialogue.
Yes.
You know, like when Anakin is talking to Padme and they just have this.
Oh, that's,
the dialogue
that
is just
so it's clunky.
Oh, it's painful to watch. And I mean, don't even get me started on Jar Jar Binks. I already brought him up earlier when I was talking about Misa like you and all this. But yeah, we don't have to relive that. I mean, I'm still having nightmares. But yeah, as long as like the dialogue doesn't have that clunky, the awkward one-liners, and I don't know. It's just if like you said, if Ron Howard gets the performances out of the actors and they put up, it already seems like it might be a little bit witty, which is fine. I don't mind wit at all. I mean, I think actually that adds to the movie where Han says, yeah, no, everything's fine. You know, there's no problems here. And all of a sudden, well, there is a problem and everybody has this look of terror on their face. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's totally cool. But what I want, what I hope they avoid though, is just the slapstick, the weird one-liners, the clunky dialogue that doesn't really fit into the story, all that stuff that we saw in the three prequels. Oh God, it's just horrible. You know, but maybe I'll get hate mail for that. Who knows? But hey,
let's hope. Let's hope.
I know that means people are listening. Anyway, that was probably my swan song for Solo. Other than, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and absolutely, I'm going to go see this one in the theater. It seems like every year we probably see three movies in the theater and two of them are Star Wars, the Christmas release and the Memorial Day release. And then somewhere in there, we see a third one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, this is, and again, it gets to the point where, as I say, I'm outgrowing Star Wars, but like when it comes out, how do I not go? I mean, like I've been, since 1977, I saw the first one in the theater. Yeah. I mean, like, how do I not see them all in the theater at this point? It's like, you know.
Totally. So the thing about this is the trailer didn't affect it. You were going to see this one regardless.
I'm going to see this one regardless. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Regardless, let's put it this way. The Last Jedi, the funny thing about that was and you mentioned this in one of the our episodes where people go in, they don't even watch trailers because they want no spoilers,
yeah,
and everything.
That's you, this, me and this.
Well, no, with the Last Jedi, that was I purposely avoided that trailer. We went into the movie, I knew nothing about anything. And the reason I did that was with The Force Awakens, I watched all the trailers.
Mm-hmm. All the TV like spots, everything.
The TV spots. I watched the stuff on YouTube. I was totally into it. Went and watched it in the theater. Disappointment abounds.
Really?
So I thought, okay, I'm not going to watch anything with The Last Jedi. Honestly, I'm glad I didn't watch anything because I don't think a trailer could have helped my cause. And I went in excited to see a Star Wars movie, and it was a Star Wars movie. I mean, but I think it was my only complaint about that one was just too much magic. I mean, too much Jedi magic. Like, scale back on it a little bit, and, you know,
force projection is not your thing.
Yeah, I mean, that just did me in. But overall, watching Solo, I probably won't watch any more trailers. Okay. I'll probably just go in with what we have. I mean, let's put it this way. Growing up, whenever we would play Star Wars as kids, I mean, this is right in my wheelhouse. So in 1977, I was, 6 years old?
Uh-huh.
And going into Empire, I was like, 9 or 10, mm-hmm, depending on the release date. So when we look at that as a 10-year-old, my favorite character, we'd play Star Wars in the backyard, jumping out of trees, tackling each other, whatever it was. But like my buddy Brian was always Luke Skywalker. his brother, for whatever reason, was always Darth Vader, and I was always Han Solo, right?
There you go.
And definitely my favorite character. So it would be against my constitution to not go see this movie.
And if it's your favorite character and you've played him your whole life in play,
and I'm still playing him. What are you talking about?
then there's nothing this movie can do but let you down.
Right. Well, the funny thing is, you know, I the video game Knights of the Old Republic, you know, and you keep going down like the dark path or the light path and everything. I'm like, I don't even want a path. I just want to be Han Solo. But they forced me into being a Jedi.
No.
Yeah. But no, anyway. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna go see it. I mean, it goes without saying. Excitement or disappointment? Well, excitement is high. Acceptance? Meh, we'll see how it goes.
Cool.
How about you?
I'm definitely going to see it. I'm definitely excited about it. I'm excited about Lando. I think Lando's going to steal the show, as I said before.
Yeah, me too. I couldn't agree more.
Between the Lando and L337, those two guys are going to be cracking it up and, you know, Colt 45-ing it all the way to the bank. So speaking of Colt 45, can I hit you with my three-word review?
Sure, go for
it. My three-word review for a Solo, a Star Wars story, is no keg cups.
No keg cups. All right, wait a minute. Oh, wait. No keg cups. So Solo is
the red plastic keg.
Right, okay, I got that. And so it's like a double entendre. Hold on, I got to play this out. So Han Solo, the Solo keg cup. But why no keg cups? Are you saying it's not going to be a flop?
Well, no, I think that's our joke around the office is that Solo is, you know, when they took out, you know, everybody called it the Han Solo, the untitled Han Solo project or the untitled Han Solo film before it was named and branded and you know.
Before it was named Solo.
Before it was named Solo. And then sometimes right. They even say Solo without a Star Wars story. So I think you have to say no keg cups.
Yeah. Well, and let me just say that too really quick. I mean, I think Solo is such an awesome name for the character because, yeah, he's a rogue and he's brash and he kind of runs the way he runs, no relationships, no attachments. I mean, he's Solo.
Except for Chewie.
All right. Well, except for Chewie, yeah. He's tied to, well, although he's like a slave servant or something because like Han rescued him. Isn't that what it is?
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to see.
I think that's how the story goes. But yeah, I think Chewie owes him a debt, a life debt or something, because Han saved his life. Wow. And now Chewie's like I think that's why Chewie's so loyal.
That's deep. Is that in a novel somewhere? Is that in a comic book or something? Or you just
That's canon. Oh,
well, yeah, I think that's canon.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember where I learned that, but I think that's the reason why he's so loyal to him. And I'm sure there's Star Wars geeks out there like yelling at their computer right now. No, you're totally wrong, you know, but anyway, I think I'm close enough.
Yeah. So, you know how I said I like to put a poster on my phone and use that as inspiration as we get prepared for this.
Sure.
I got this.
Nice. Yeah, beautiful.
It's the figurine of Han Solo and Chewie as they're coming back onto the Millennium Falcon in The Force Awakens.
Wonderful.
And they stand in the hallway. And that's echoed in this trailer where we see the clean hallway of the Millennium Falcon where it's brand new. Did you even recognize it?
Oh, no, I totally did. And that was one of my complaints. So I watched one of the trailers. And it said it was like a 2-minute, 35-second trailer. So I thought, oh, wow, they have the new trailer out, you know?
The full trailer, not the teaser trailer.
Not the teaser, exactly. Not the teaser, the full. So what it was is, it was the teaser trailer. Well, the one that I saw, anyway. It was the teaser trailer. And then they replayed the teaser trailer, but with different, like, voiceovers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the heck is this? I was so angry. And I'm like, this can't be it. And all I could think is it must have been somebody cut it together. I don't know what it was, but I turned it off in anger. All right.
So after the break, we're going to get into the first three trailers for three of the Best Picture nominations. But that'll be after this break.
All right, and we're back. So Ted called us into the three Oscar nomination, well, Best Picture nomination for the Oscars. And we're going to look at each one of these movies. We're going to start with the three indie ones, I guess they're indies, aren't they, Ted?
Yeah, I kind of categorize these into three rough categories.
They have the indie feel. Kind of like, I mean, we're going into March with the Oscars, and the next thing that comes into March is March Madness when you look at college basketball and everything. So we're going to kind of do a bracket system as best we can with nine movies. Each week, we're going to cover three. We're going to rate them on 5 points for five different categories for a max of 25 points. And what we're going to do is then the winner of the first week, the second week, the third week, at the end, we're going to put all three winners up against each other in another bracket that's going to have a different rating system that Ted could talk about later. But this week, what we're going to look at is music, editing, the story, the acting, and the directing, all as it relates to the trailer itself. So whatever you think of the movie and how the movie plays out is irrelevant. In Three Billboards, the music is in the background. It's definitely not a force throughout the trailer in the way that music is in a lot of other trailers. It's pretty subtle. Not much music in the beginning. I think it kind of works for this trailer because of how angry Frances McDormand is. Woody Harrelson's character, how he's the laid-back sheriff or whatever he is in town. The music's kind of laid back. I don't think it's as impactful as it could be. So with that said, I give it like 2 stars. How about you? Let's go with the music.
I agree. So this is a good way to do it. Yeah, I agree with your musical assertion on this film. I gave it 3 out of 5. It wasn't doing a lot of heavy lifting, but it didn't get in the way. So
yeah, and then so you gave it. I gave it 2. You gave it 3. Okay. So editing. I think the editing in this brings the story along nicely. I think it builds it throughout. The one thing I like about the editing in this movie, or I should say in this trailer, is that it starts off low-level anger. You can tell she's upset. The anger that Frances McDormand feels grows and builds throughout the trailer to the point now she's becoming violent and hostile and physically aggressive. Then all of a sudden, everybody is beating everybody up and getting punched in the face and kicked in the groin, breaking windows. And then it just, at the end, it kind of brings it slightly back down with her cussing like a sailor at the news anchor.
Right.
I think the editing kind of like brought you up. You had that climax at that peak and it kind of slightly brought you back down, but it still left you with that feeling that, man, I am pissed off. So I give the editing about 4 stars in this one.
Wow. Yeah, I went low on the editing. I think
ooh, kind conservative.
Of, yeah, I think I gave it a 2 on editing.
Two, okay.
It didn't help me follow along. There was something, I don't know, it felt a little off. I think the same thing you said about the music, like I thought the music was doing more work than the editing in this, so that's why I kind of flip-flopped with you on the music and
I got
editing.
Yeah, I got you. So then we're looking at the story. The story kind of reminds me of Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Love that movie.
And Yeah, yeah. And he's just this angry guy at society. Society's not working out, and he decides, you know, when McDonald's stops serving breakfast at 10:01 and he decides it's time to just shoot up McDonald's. And I kind of get the feeling from her in this that the police aren't doing their thing, and she's going to do whatever it is that she can do to take care of the police. She's angry at the world. She doesn't like the outcome of with her daughter who got murdered, and you know, she's just mad at everybody. Overall, it's an average story. I'm giving it, you know, a 3. I mean, I don't think the story is overall compelling. Maybe the movie's different, but as far as the trailer, I'm going with a 3.
Yeah, for the trailer,
average.
I thought the story was 2. The same thing with the editing. The way that the characters are portrayed, it really didn't endear me to anybody. I didn't feel like, you know, especially when you compare it to Falling Down. I mean, Michael Douglas is so powerful in that. And Frances McDormand is a great actress. And I just didn't feel compelled to feel anything for her. You know, we know that her daughter died in this horrible, horrific way. And yet the things that she does are not justified, and they don't feel motivated in a way. So it really just didn't do it for me.
Yeah. So next would be acting. And I would say in this one, I mean, they make it believable. The one thing, though, that I did like about the acting in this particular one is that you see these actors and actresses, dozens of movies, TV shows. The only thing I can say is that it separates them from, or I should say they separate themselves well from the things they've been in the past.
Right.
So they carry their characters, and, you know, I'm not going to say that their characters are overall compelling, but the way they do it, you don't, like, you know, like you said, when we bring in John Krasinski and we think about Jim Halpert all the time, I think they do a good job of not having that stereotype and that legacy carrying over from, you know, like, you don't necessarily look at Woody Harrelson and think of Cheers. You know what I mean? Yeah. And but at the same time, again, and like you said, I don't think the characters grab me to the point where, oh, man, I got to go see this movie. It looks so amazing. You know, so I'm going to give the acting a 3.
Yeah, this is the one thing that I gave a higher grade. I gave acting a 4 out of 5. Just the caliber of this acting ensemble with Sam Rockwell in there. Peter Dinklage, I saw him in there. Just knowing those people are in there, I don't even care. It makes me want to see it more than I want to see this movie by the characters. I'd rather see these actors trying to play these characters. Woody Harrelson, I'm a big fan of his, so he has range, I think, you know, and this trailer shows his comedic touch and realism. So I really think, for me, he's kind of this breakout character where I expected Frances McDormand to be a little more Fargo, and she's a little less something like that.
So you gave it a 4, you said.
I gave it a 4.
Okay. So lastly for this movie is directing. And I thought directing was fine. I mean, it seems pretty straightforward for this type of movie. Mm-hmm. The one thing I did like was the camera's perspective. Number of scenes, the way the camera just showed the scenes. I mean, I thought they did a pretty decent job. I didn't think anything was, you know, was really spectacular with the lighting.
Yeah.
The cinematography.
That's right. That's right. You got it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Good. I mean, I screw that up every week. I would say that it's not exceptional.
Yeah.
I think it's just average. I don't think it's bad. I think it's just average. So with an average cinematography and directing, I gave it a score of a 3, right in the middle.
There you go. Couldn't agree more.
Total 15 on my side.
Yeah, I got a total of 14. I guess the story and the editing dipped a little bit for me. So, yeah, you got 15 out of 25, and I got 14 out of 25.
Okay, okay. So moving on to Lady Bird. Lady Bird is a movie about an adolescent girl who seems to be trying to find her identity. Let's start with the music, like we did with the last one, I guess. So I think it works for this trailer. It's simple, draws you into her mood, kind of her snarky attitude. I think overall, I mean, it's not in your face, like rocking you and all this kind of stuff. But I think because we're looking at it in the scope of the trailer, I gave this one a 4. I thought the music was pretty decent with it.
Okay. Yeah, I went a little lower on that. You know, it's I think it's trying to do stuff. I don't think that the trailer music feels as genuine as I'd want it to be in a film like this. You know, it lacks a sentimentality, but maybe that's the character of the characters of the film, and that's what it's trying to do. But it missed the mark for me, so I gave it a 2.
Okay. Well, hey, editing. So the editing in this particular one, I think, does its job. It moves the story along. Nothing spectacular, nothing too risky, pretty average. You know, it's just bumping along for 2.5 minutes or however long it was as they kind of go through this girl's senior, what appears like her senior in high school, her adolescence. Yeah, nothing. It didn't really like, you know, there weren't any like incredible jump cuts. There weren't, you know, you didn't get any of that stuff. So, 2. I'm going with a 2 on that for editing.
Me too. 2. No, nothing incredible about the editing, nothing incredible about the camera work. So very blah.
Yeah. Pretty much. Blah is a good way to put it.
It's a technical term.
Yeah. Storyline. Again, as it relates to the trailer. Yeah. You know, overall, I think a heartwarming and compelling story. It's her adolescent. It's a girl's adolescent struggle to find her identity. Overall, I like the story. I mean, I work with teenagers for my job. I work in a high school, and you know, I see these kinds of stories play out, and just kids kind of confused, wondering what to do, where to go. They have their ideas. Their ideas are kind of immature, you know, but yet they think they can conquer the world because they're not yet jaded and calloused. And, you know, I don't know. I think the story plays out. I mean, I actually want to see it for the story of how this girl gets through her like that year of her life. I mean, because maybe I can even work this into something I'm doing at my job or whatever. Because of that, I gave it a 4. I thought the story is probably looks pretty decent.
You know, and it's so funny, while you were doing that, I gave this story a 2. I'm not a fan of this movie. But after hearing you say it, I watched it again. We're doing this and it's all real time. So I'm gonna bump mine up to a 4 as well.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, on the other hand, the story looks cool, and the story looks like, you know, and the only reason I say the story looks cool is because it's kind of what I deal with at work. But however, the acting, it does not draw me in.
No.
A little bit bland. You know, I just don't have much else to say about it. It just seems like bland acting. Like, you know, they're giving their lines, they're doing their thing. She's kind of dry. She's kind of flat, you know. 2.
2. Yeah, I gave it a 3. You know, that's what they're going for. I think that's the direction she's given, and I think she executes it well. But I don't think there's a lot of range there. I don't know what these actors can do.
Yeah.
And nobody's really stretching. So acting for me is a 3.
Exactly my point. Like, nobody's really stretching to grow their role or something. Right. You know, it's pretty conservative in the acting and stuff. I think directing is kind of the same way. I mean, the directing is okay. It doesn't really push boundaries. Mm-hmm. Pretty conservative. And I think it's typical of this style of storytelling. Like, you know, Juno maybe had similar directing. I don't know. I wouldn't say it, like you said, it doesn't stretch. I don't think it's bad. I think it's just average. Typical, to the type of average story they're, yes, telling. Yeah. Right. So because, I mean, if you look at a 1 to 5 and 3 is in the middle, three is average, I'm going to say a 3.
Yeah, and I take it one step further. I gave it a 3 as well, but, you know, you talk about Juno and you talk about coming of age, and I was talking to the guys this morning about Rushmore, and to me, Rushmore is like this amazing, you know, everything about coming of age, and so against that scale, it pales in comparison. So, yeah, directing 3. What do you have a total? And I have to recalculate my total because you maybe changed my story.
Math in your head. So let's see. I have what do I have? I have 4-2. Oh, what do we do if there's a tie?
Oh, I mean, right, well, there's, I guess, not going to be a tie.
Yeah, because then we have to take the. We'll have to pull out the calculator.
We'll figure it out if there's a tie. I doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, last one.
Oh, wait.
Sorry about that.
So I'm giving 3-word reviews for these two. 3 billboards.
Oh, beautiful.
Forgettably long title. That's 3 billboards. And then Lady Bird, sympathetic, not pathetic.
Sympathetic, not pathetic. Okay, right? Sure.
And then Call Me By Your Name was the.
Well, hold on. We got to finish it, and then you can do it.
Yeah. Call me by your name, and then you go into the categories.
Okay. All right. Let's start again with music.
Yes.
I'd say the music is soft, not obtrusive. Yeah. Well, you don't like the music?
No, I love the music. I thought it was crucial. It was critical to this trailer, I thought.
Exactly. Okay. Maybe we're saying the same thing in a different way. Yeah. It's soft music. I mean, it's not like, you know, Mortal Engines, right? Where they're just in your face with it. That's what I mean when I say it's non-obtrusive.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's doing its job.
Yes.
You know? And it's setting the mood and the tone.
Totally.
It's what the music's doing. Yeah. It's not like in your face, it's all about the music. No, the music is in its place, doing what it needs to do, setting the mood for this and the tone for this. Other than that, I mean, I don't think there's a lot to say about it. I mean, it works awesome with the directing, the editing, and the acting. I mean, I think it fits extremely well within the context of this particular trailer.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And this one, I mean, it's kind of funny that right off the bat you kind of jumped on me, but I'm gonna give this the music with this one a 5.
No. That's so funny because, like, I was thinking you said it's unobtrusive, and I'm like, that's a bad thing. And then I'm giving it a 4, and I'm thinking a 4 is a great number. So I'm a hard rater. So I'm giving the music a 4. I think it's doing great things, but I want to give music for the rest of these trailers, the other 6 trailers, a space to do better, I guess.
So, really quick, a side story. A quick side story. I know we sometimes go on tangents. So I remember I crashed mountain biking once, broke my collarbone and ribs and all this. And I go to the emergency room and they say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how's the pain? And I said, like, an 8. And they said, an 8, but you broke bones. You've ever broke bones before? I said, no, it's the first time I broke bones. They said, well, why only an 8? Why not a 10? I said, well, what if it gets worse? I got to leave room.
See, exactly. Only room.
No, but with the music, though, like I said, when I said, you know, it's unobtrusive, what I meant was, and maybe I didn't come across well, but what I meant was, is that it does its job. Let me back up. It does the job that the music's supposed to do, but it doesn't distract you from what's going on.
Yeah.
And it draws you. It does everything it's supposed to do without ruining the trailer.
And for the trailer, and that's why I think the trailer, it carries it. It, you know, it tells the story of the trailer, in the beginning, it's like driving you and it's doing its thing, and then it shifts and then it does a new thing. And then, you know, there's a new feeling that you have in the trailer, and then the music has shifted. So it does serious heavy lifting without even you recognizing that it's doing it. So,
yeah. Editing. I think it brings the story along nicely. It builds throughout. It kind of leaves you wondering and wanting more, I guess. I don't think it's exciting in any way. I don't think, you know, there's no jump cuts. There's nothing that you would expect from a trailer. Generally speaking, I'm going to give it a 3. I think it's average editing.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 as well. Doesn't get in the way, but in comparison to the music, it's not doing, you know, nearly enough work.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Storyline, you know, another adolescent, well, I would assume like later adolescent, mm-hmm. maybe 21, 22 ish, finding his identity again, you know, one of those kind of coming of age movies, foreign exchange student in a foreign land. What I don't really get is the story. So he's an exchange student and he has a crush on this another American guy, exchange student. I mean, why not make it like a French, because it seems like they're in France. Mm-hmm. Why not make it a French thing? And I don't know, you go across the world and that's kind of like your experience, like it kind of opens your experience to new horizons, new experiences, new people, new cultures. But no, he goes for the guy who he could just wind up with if he just stayed in the U.S. Like, whatever. It didn't do it for me in that point. You know, I give it 3.
3. Story, I gave it 4. I think it's an interesting take on this. I never saw Brokeback Mountain, but I have a feeling.
I had a thought of that, too. Yeah, I never saw it either, but
I have a feeling that this has similar kind of emotional, you know, movements throughout. So I feel like the story of the trailer, at least, is extremely thought provoking and definitely draws you in. So it's doing its job in there and as a trailer.
And then acting, completely believable. I mean, the actors carry the characters well. They certainly draw you in. Watching it, you almost you get the feeling that like care and love and admiration and everything they have for each other like is. Totally. I mean, I think the acting is what carries this above and beyond any of that stuff. And I mean, I'm going to give the acting 5 stars on this one.
Ditto. I gave acting 5 stars. I left no room for any other movies to be better at acting than this. And I think Armie Hammer definitely shows his chops here and like does an amazing performance. And it shows in the trailer.
Exactly. Finally, directing. Yeah, I think the directing is well done. I love the scenes, you know, and like with photography and stuff. I mean, I love like contrasty light and black and whites and everything. Mm-hmm. In this movie, well, okay, it's in color. I mean, there's no black and white, but in this movie though, those night scenes, mm-hmm. the lighting is so dim and dark, but the lighting is put on their faces well. The cinematography works well. I love the panning across the screen, the camera work, the directing. I mean, you know, I'm not giving it 5 stars, but I'm going to give it 4 stars, but I think it's done well.
Definitely.
Yeah. The directing is done well.
Yeah. I think the directing is done well, but I really think the actors are carrying the day here. So I give the directing a 3. It's staying out of the way, but it's not crazy over the top. If we had split it out into cinematography, maybe it would have gotten higher grade. But as far as directing goes, it's good, but it's not exemplary like the acting.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So what does that leave you with?
Leaves me with a 19. So for me.
Yeah. So I have 8, 11, 16. What do I have? 20.
Wow.
Is that what I have here?
Wow.
So see? 5, 8, 11. Yeah, I have 20. So, okay, well, I think we have a winner this week.
Winner, call me by your name. So the 3-word review for Call Me By Your Name is Call Me Snubbed.
Whoa, Call Me Snubbed. I like it. I guess it's a reference to Armie Hammer getting snubbed for supporting actor. Well, with that, they win anyway.
Yep. Call Me By Your Name advances to the second round.
Well, I guess the final round.
Oh, sorry. Yes, the final round.
Anyway, yeah, so I guess that's it for tonight.
Awesome.
Yeah, and as always, we always ask you guys to like, subscribe, and share, and find us on your favorite podcast catcher. iTunes, if you want, leave a review, and Google Play, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and throughout the week, all these weeks, you can always catch us at T-Junkies Podcast on Twitter, where I'll be giving hot takes on trailers as they come out, and we'll be conversing about stuff like the Solo trailer this week, and anything that comes out. Anything that's on your mind, hit us up.
Yeah, and you can find everything at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. You can hit all our social media, podcast links to wherever you get your podcasts, show notes to episodes. You can contact us, our about page. Everything's there. And we look forward to talking next week. And yeah, we'll catch you later.
Oh, and definitely check out our website. It has all the trailers that we talked about today. And in addition to that, if you're ever in the market for going to the movies or giving a gift certificate to somebody, definitely hit up our website and check out our link to Fandango.
Awesome. Well, I think I'm going to go check out Fandango right now. So, Ted, you have a good night.
You have a good night.
All right, man. Later.
Thanks, man.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.